Today is Friday. It's October 28th, 2016. This is John Williams, and you are listening to The Mincing Rascals, portions of which are normally broadcast on my Saturday afternoon show on WGN Radio at 1:30.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on WGN.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune.
And I'm Eric Zorn.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, Zorn, Zorn.
Really? Twice?
Sing the praises of Zorn.
Isn't that a nice song? It's my favorite song now.
Let's just say, looking at you all, no one enjoys that more than Eric.
I was just thinking about Zorn and the word Zorn. Doesn't it sound like a metal band, like an Icelandic metal band?
You know, it's a German word that means wrath.
Are we still introducing you, Eric?
We are. You know, I've got to say, you know, my colleague Rex Hupke has a podcast also on WGN Plus. He introduced himself last week as the terrible Tribune columnist, Rex Hupke. So I'm going to introduce myself as the wonderful Tribune columnist, Eric Zorn. I have a column on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays in the Tribune.
Eric Zorn is the. Trying to think of a clean word. Is the Garrison Keillor of the Chicago Tribune, because he just can't help himself these days. Everything that you write, my wife's sitting there chuckling, and she goes, I go, what now? And she goes, listen to what Zorn said, and then you just go, boy. You just go, boy. You've been unrelenting the last few months, Eric, in your observations on the election. But before we get to that, let's start with the fact that as we record this today, we are but hours away from the first time in 108 years, the Chicago Cubs playing in a World Series game at Wrigley Field. The energy in the town is, well, you guys tell me, off the charts, right? Is it just everywhere? Can you just feel it? Can you just see it?
I just walked in. I mean, virtually everyone's wearing a Cubs something, including myself. And it's been 71 years since a World Series has been played at Wrigley Field.
Oh, that's right. Well, I guess I'm borrowing the 108 because,
yeah, right.
And we haven't won the World Series yet. So still, 108 is the real operative number here, though. That's the thing that people are thinking about.
So you're one of those guys who says we?
Is that a bad thing, Steve?
I don't know. I think it does differentiate people, but I'm not sure exactly.
See, either we're going to win or they're going to lose. That's
no, but I mean, this is a city. This transcends baseball and the baseball players. This is about the town. A few White Sox fans notwithstanding, this is the whole city. This is really the great thing about great sports, isn't it? How everybody is talking about and sharing and feeling something positive at the same time. Isn't that great?
I'm so glad that Kristen McQuarrie is not here to suffer through your Cubs
enthusiasm.
No, I mean, I'm all for the Cubs. I do have an observation here, which is that the Cubs have been my favorite baseball team for 30 years. But I grew up a Tiger fan, Detroit Tigers. I grew up in the Detroit area as a Tiger fan. The Tigers won in 68. They won again in 84.
They won in 45.
It's true. Who did they beat in 45? Oh, yeah.
Tigers.
Yeah, they beat the Cubs in 45. But that was a little before I was born. And the
We broke news on this podcast.
I don't think that I have the same feeling about this series I'm not a true lifelong Cub fan because I haven't felt that pain all my life. I haven't been waiting my whole life for this. My team has won the World Series. Even though the Cubs have been my team for 30 years, I still feel like a little bit of an outsider as a
Cub
fan. Yes, I do.
And I have been waiting my whole life for this.
I respect that. I do.
I am a sympathetic patsy I used the wrong word there, but you know, I'm the sort of guy who will cry at a coffee commercial. I'm this very, you know,
so Subaru ads, I'm Subaru,
and I am emotionally
unattached
to this World Series, and I don't understand why.
We need a new podcast, you guys.
I'm standing
in Minneapolis. Are you kidding me? This should be a seminal moment in your lives. Chicago wins.
I know. You know me. I was a season ticket holder, diehard, and I'm a big fan of the Cubs and clearly rooting for them, enjoying every minute of it. I just expected to be a little more swept away than I have been, you know, like teary, thinking about my dad. And I think what it is that in all the other playoff runs, it was unlikely You know, in 84, it was unlikely that they were going to win. In 2003, we were surprised by what was happening. I fully expect them to win the World Series this week or next week.
Yeah. Wow.
I think that's why so few people enjoyed the NLCS, Steve, because, you know, you thought, if we screw this up, this will just be a disaster.
No, I mean, even when they went down in the NLCS and weren't hitting, I just feel there's just this team is so good. Their leadership is so great that I'm fully confident. I'm not biting my fingernails. I have no emotional investment.
And
in
there is a sense. Do you have a sense that if they don't happen to win this year, that they're so good, they're stacked?
They're
going to win the next year.
That is something I said in 2003, though. So.
And you were right. It just took a little more time than you thought. And don't forget, this is the youngest team in the history of the World Series. Six members of the team are 24 years or younger, so they're going to be around for a long time. As for me, I'm like Eric. I grew up in San Diego, and I saw the Padres play their very first major league game in 1969. I'm that old. And so when they were in that short series in 1984 with the Padres, it was the first column I ever wrote that professionally. And it was pretty much everyone was for the Cubs. The whole country was for the Cubs. Right. No one was for the Padres. And I finally had to write something and say, guys, you know, at least the Cubs have won one. Granted, it was 1908. But they've won one. The Padres have never even been. So
long and storied history of 15 years.
Well, but could we have a little Southern California love for the Southern California team that's actually in this championship series?
So then they went on to the World Series. And, who did they lose to?
Well, they won a game, which is the sole and only World Series victory they have. They are 1-8.
All right, so Scott, what is your favorite anecdote or factoid? I mean, there's so much spinning out of this about this run this year. Give me
one. So much. I actually drew a cartoon essay for the Special Tribune World Series section called The Broken Cub, and story after story after story. I mean, Bertram just mentioned his father about people who's wished that one relative or another had survived to see this because they, you know, were like most Cubs fans. I just want to see it once in my lifetime.
My dad's still alive, just so you know.
Oh, he is. Okay.
But he still suffered a long time.
Okay, well, now he's lived long enough to see this. Good for him. The gist of the story is that the father in the story did not. I was talking, and the story for me is I was talking to my wife, who does not understand sports at all, why people like it, why they watch it, why they, you know, live and die by the stuff. And a friend of mine, Chris Roebling, who we know, Republican operative here in the city, had posted that he wishes his mom had seen it. When she passed away, her head was resting on a Cubs pillow. And Janine goes, oh, that's so sad and really creepy. I go, what are you talking about? She did not understand how important sports are to people and how it binds a community. And this place is going nuts. But there is a level of melancholy that comes along with it.
Is Janine human?
She's Croatian.
Are you sure?
There's someone, I don't remember who it was now, an acquaintance of I think it was sort of my wife, a friend of mine, who said that when the father died and the children were surrounding him at his deathbed, he apologized to them for making them Cub fans and for the suffering that he put them through. Apparently that really happened.
How about the story of Helen Schlegel, who set up the GoFundMe page for her 97-year-old grandfather, who, having returned from Pearl Harbor as a 27-year-old sailor, came to Chicago, and he's never been able to see the Cubs play in a World Series game. I think that's the way the story went. Anyway, they did a GoFundMe page for him. They got $13,000, and now the grandfather and father are able to go see the World Series. What a wonderful story.
People are lining up today. This is Friday as we're recording this podcast, and
early in the morning,
it's a 15 hours before the first pitch to go get into a bar in Wrigleyville. That's
and
crazy.
Pay $200 as a cover charge.
I'll tell you who's on my mind this week, and that is the person I refer to as he who should not be named. The poor fellow who interfered.
I totally agree. I call him foul ball guy.
And I hope that the Cubs win the World Series, obviously, and I hope that they have the class and the foresight to invite him onto the bus and have him join the team as they go through town.
Oh,
for the
that'd
ticker
be nice.
Parade. You know, just like.
Really? Yeah. You think so?
Because, you know, was it Cass who said he should throw out the first pitch? Yeah. I had to read the whole column.
I just thought Cass did suggest that, and it was not a bad idea. I thought it was a little too soon.
It is a bad idea.
Like, you don't want him out there by himself. You don't want people to say, like, well, we were going to win until that guy threw out the pitch.
Right.
So I think, you know, no, keeping him, but at some point we need to all stop invoking that poor man's name.
Well, why not when they throw out the first pitch? He's actually behind the catcher, shoves him out of the way, and grabs the ball.
Shut up.
Go Bama.
But you know, he's not done an interview, print, online. He has in no way publicly commented about it since that night, which I think is a lesson to all of us about how you can not be part of the media if you don't want to.
Well, he's
an exceptional story that way.
He issued a statement the following day, and that's all he's done.
Only through his spokesperson.
Statement. And you know, he could have cashed in big time. He had offers to do Super Bowl commercials. I mean, think about it. Really? Porn?
Yeah.
That's some kink there.
I don't know why I threw that in there, but I mean, yeah. I mean,
it's been
all over the map.
Yeah, there you go.
But he's not so much as deigned to do a single live or recorded interview, and I think that's just terrific. And you know, you can interpret that a lot of ways. To me, the longer it goes and the more opportunities and overtures there are for him to sort of come back to the fold, the more it feels like him sort of thumbing his nose at Chicago, and that's unfair to him because he hasn't said a damn thing. I'd like to see him do or say something. I'm trying to get an interview from him. But I'm not sure that putting him literally on the team bus is a good idea.
I would. No one's going to boo the guy. I just think it's time to put that story behind
us. If he's standing next to Joe Madden up there as they're bringing the trophy down, you know, State Street or whatever, oh, yeah, that's like the Pope giving him absolution.
Absolutely.
What, do you want him to have the billy goat up there, too? I mean, come on.
That's where we're going on this, and I don't think – I'm not real entertained anymore by the billy goat and the curse and the foul ball guys.
It all should be over. It's all going to be over.
Well, it is over. What about the Schwarber story? What do you got? Isn't that just part of the magic of this run? I mean, isn't that just fantastic?
That guy is he looks like a cartoon character.
Bam Bam.
Bam Bam, they call him.
Hurt the first couple of weeks of this season, and then he does like 13,000 at-bats on a pitching machine, calls up the general manager and says, I'm ready.
And then Pete Rose goes on TV and goes, this guy's going to strike out three times tonight.
I was just going to say, they go to a break during the game. Rose says he's going to strike out and comes back up to bat that inning and almost hits a home run.
Yeah, well, bounces
Pete
a double
Rose,
off the wall.
He just looks like your bloated uncle. Like, who's
God. He looks like his mother dressed him in the dark, too. Why is he on TV?
Well, he literally lists. I mean,
I know. You can't understand him. What's he got to say? And when he said he's going to strike out three times, I almost thought I heard him say, I'll bet you he's going to strike out three times. I'm like, shut up. I know you're Pete Rose. You're the greatest hitter in the history of the game. Why are you on TV? I do not want to hear you, Pete Rose.
He fits right in with those other glamour boys that are sitting there.
No, actually, I think A-Rod does a good job.
I wasn't ripping him, but yeah, I'm just saying, you know,
you just got to love the guy. I mean, come on. Right?
So Schwarber then is what got, as we speak, three or four hits and RBIs, and it's amazing though that Joe Madden or Epstein or whoever makes that call, you know, green lights him in the lineup. Granted, it was the advantage of being an American League team, so they didn't have to play him in the field.
Well,
but the chutzpah to put him in the lineup in the World Series.
To give him a roster spot.
I was thinking Rose was saying. I have to say, I thought this is not a good idea.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I didn't think it was either. Who thought that he was going to do that
A guy had not seen a major league pitch all season.
His first hit of the year was in the World Series.
That's amazing.
And I also don't like, I was talking to a Dave Kaplan, the, of course, famous sports guy in Chicago, and I said, what do you think of the All-Star game determining home field advantage? Now I'm really hating that. And he just kind of shrugged and said, if we have the three games in the middle at home, we could wrap it up here. I like that better than 2-2. So he wasn't exercised by it at all. Do you guys think about or feel that at all?
I think it's nice that the All-Star game means something.
Oh, really?
I do, absolutely. So why not?
And here's just another anecdote, factoid of mine that I will just throw at you guys for observation. The outgoing president, the last time we won the World Series was Teddy Roosevelt. That's how long this has been. I mean, think about that.
Well, think about the last time a series game was played in Chicago. Harry Truman had just ascended to the presidency on the death of FDR.
Well, they made a big deal of the fact that Dexter Fowler was the first African-American player to play for the Cubs in the World Series. He actually turned out to be the first African-American player to go 0-3 in a World Series game.
Yeah, Pete, pick that, Pete Rose. One last thing. I'm also entertained by the travel stories. As we speak, my brother is in a car driving from Denver to Chicago so that he can sit in my son's little condo in Ravenswood and watch the game on TV, but he wants to be in the city when it happens.
Well,
has no intention of going to a bar.
How much is your son charging for a cover?
He could. He could. And, you know, my brother's crazy enough he'd pay it. But I just, you know, Mary Schmeek had a story about the father and son that traveled from Australia. And those kinds of stories are extraordinary.
And they're not going to the game. I mean, you read Mary's column today. These guys came from Australia just to be in Wrigleyville.
In Chicago,
I just got an email this morning. Stefan Pastis, who does Pearls Before Swine comic strip, is flying in to Chicago just to walk around Wrigleyville and be here for that.
Wow. One last thing, and we're going to segue to politics in just a second, but the members of the Chicago City Council.
Sorry. Go on.
That's all I have to say. I guess that's...
John, we discussed this briefly last week. You were absent. I have sympathy for them.
Oh, come on.
I know.
Come on.
I'm not going to defend it.
Just set it up, Steve. Tell our listeners what we're talking about.
So the Cubs used to make available to aldermen tickets for playoff and World Series games or whatever
at face value. Of course,
there was an ethics ruling that said, well, you have to do a little dance in order to make it ethical. And then a second ruling said, no, you really can't do it. So the Cubs withdrew their offer.
Now, clearly,
the aldermen vote on issues when it comes to the Cubs. There is a conflict of interest there. But, damn, we're still Chicago. And I think I feel for people who have something that has been given to them or traditionally awarded to them that is just taken away.
Oh.
I just, when the rules change, I'm sorry, I know.
This is the worst thing you've ever said.
It's indefensible.
Yeah, the top three.
You do-gooders in print start taking things from people and,
All right. Eric Zorn, what's your thought about that?
I waited on this last week. It's completely unacceptable. These guys vote, as Steve points out, they vote on things having to do with Wrigley Field. This is, getting a face value ticket is like, you know, getting the golden ticket into Willy Wonka's factory at this point.
Yeah, boy, this is the difference between print and broadcast media. Us broadcasters aren't literally held to the same standard that print people impose on themselves. I'm a little more like Steve than I am like you, Eric.
You know, it might draw better people to run for alderman if they knew they had World Series tickets.
Well, they're making six figures.
It's worked
still.
So far. Yeah, the alderman from the 30th District, whose name escapes me right now, stood on. I mean, this is an alder person standing in the city council chamber saying, "A, she's poor,
so Millie she's Santiago."
I know.
And goes on to say that. I love this. And and besides, these are lousy seats.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, my God. Shut up.
Yeah, I think what she was really trying to get was better seats, not just seats, but she wanted seats and she wanted them out of the upper deck. She said, if I stand up, I can touch this roof of the upper deck. That's how bad the seats are. And I thought, you can't say in the same sentence bad and seats to a World Series game at Wrigley Field.
Okay,
that's an oxymoron.
If you're an alderman in Chicago, Illinois, you have the sense of entitlement that Bertram Thien seems to think is okay.
Well, not for her. I think 49 aldermen should be invited.
Mark Kirk, debating Tammy Duckworth for his Senate seat, said this week, I forgot that your parents came all the way from Thailand to serve George Washington. And there was a brief silence while people digested that. You guys have digested that. Steve Bertrand, how big a gaffe was that?
It followed her saying that she was a daughter of the American Revolution.
Sure.
And that's why he said, I forgot your parents came over. You know, this is...
She is a daughter of the American Revolution, by the way, though.
Is she
really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. On her father's side, yeah. I mean,
her father was British, right? So was it the other side?
No, I don't know. I think her family traces back to the American Revolution.
Okay.
No, I'm serious.
Well, maybe. But, I mean, I did read that her father was British, but so...
That kind of doesn't matter here. I mean, think about what he said, and I'm asking you, Steve, and the rest of you, was that... You know, all of us just looking for something, or was that an insult?
I think it was an unfortunate unfortunate epithet to a political career that, was shortened by a debilitating stroke. I mean, we've talked about Mark Kirk, who was a fine congressman. I lived in his district for many years, still do, and then senator, and he has had these difficulties with, you know, I was joking earlier that it's like WikiLeaks has stolen his emails and they're releasing him through his mouth.
That's good.
Well, I actually am a big enough nerd that I watched the debate on the Blue Room stream last night. And Kirk, other than that gaffe and a couple of other things where he kind of lost his train of thought, he did much, much better in this debate than he did when he and Duckworth were here at the Tribune editorial board. I thought he was extremely weak and scattered at that appearance. He was doing much better. I think the headline out of that debate last night would have been, you know, an aggressive Kirk goes toe-to-toe with Duckworth had it not been for this gaffe. And it's in the lead or the headline of every story on this debate. And
it's on, like, CNN. It's above the fold on CNN right now.
It's game over for Kirk, but the game was probably
game
already
was over.
The game was over anyway.
But what does that even mean? Can somebody interpret his line, like, so what's he saying? Oh, stop parading your bona fides or your personal history around, what is he talking about?
I think he was trying to call her out on this, that you know, she's half
the child of immigrants.
Yeah, and she's a child of immigrants, but he was, it was like,
seriously,
sort of a,
but no,
it was,
no,
a racial,
hold on.
It was racially, racially tinged remark.
She doesn't, go ahead, Eric.
And it seemed also to question her military service. Her,
well, he went on to do that, right?
I mean, yeah, well, he was questioning her service in.
He knows she doesn't have feet, right?
The Veterans Administration. But it was so tone deaf and so jarring. And you just think, like, what was he getting at there? And I think what he was like, he was thinking, well, she's just Asian. She's this Asian woman. And he was sort of calling attention to that, like, oh, yeah, I'm sure you go back to the American Revolution. Well, you know, she's half Thai. She's half, you know, her father goes back to the American Revolution. So it was just, you know, and he ought to have known that. And
you think in the environment of Donald Trump, it's easier for some candidates to make slips like that?
I don't think that has. I do think it has everything to do with the fact that he had a stroke, and it was debilitating. If you see him, it obviously had an effect. There are people who have strokes who come back; they're perfectly fine, and there may be even a physical side effect, but for the most part, mentally they're fine. I don't think he's come back, and I think that this is on the heels of other slips he's had like this. You know, the bro without a hoe.
Lindsey Graham. Right. You said about Lindsey Graham.
And so, I mean, there's a series of these things. I just, you know, I think the editorial in the Chicago Tribune was absolutely correct. It said that he has not recovered sufficiently to be a U.S. senator.
Yeah, it makes the endorsement sound smarter all the time.
With all due respect to him,
all smart.
For coming back. No, I mean, he battled back from a really difficult stroke in 2012, and the courage that he showed and going up all the stairs. And I mean, you got to take your hat off to him for that. But the question remains, is this guy all back together again to be a U.S. senator? And I think the answer seems to be no.
And as you mentioned before, coming and questioning Tammy Duckworth's service to this country, I mean, I disagree with her on a lot, but I don't question that for a second. I mean, she's missing two parts of her body because she served this country so well. So anyone who would question that can go to hell.
Donald Trump in a quip this
Scott
week
Stannis.
Said that, well, speaking of quips, we should just give him the election because Hillary's campaign is so corrupt and she's so bad for America. Why don't we just give him the election?
Oh, okay.
You know, that was just a one-off by him.
Wouldn't that be a rigged election?
That, to me, is more of a pressing issue than this. But since he really didn't blow himself up too much this week, we've sort of seized on that, and as we speak, the polls are narrowing, if you can believe it, 11 days out, 10 days out.
I don't believe they are narrowing.
Not significant.
Not enough? You guys think it's a done deal?
Yeah.
I, if I'm not mistaken, Eric's probably can address this better than me, but no candidate since polling has ever been 6 points or more ahead going into the final week. Is that?
I don't know if that's the case, but just about everybody you hear talk about this, the people who really do look at these numbers carefully, say that it's pretty much over. They say that Trump's path to victory is very narrow, and it includes taking a lot of states now where he's actually behind in the polls.
But typically, for Trump, he's using violent language. His supporters are that if they don't get their way on Election Day, this could blow up and could potentially get very, very ugly.
Okay, you're the conservative here. Do you think that's true?
No.
You don't think that there
will
be?
I think there's some nutbags, but I think for the most part, no. I think will some of his followers get violent? I don't think so.
You don't think so? There could be. There's a few ways to look at it. There can be this sort of widespread revolt, which I don't think is going to happen. If there are a few nutbags, and I agree with you, a couple of them acting out.
Yes.
I think is very possible.
Yes.
It's, I mean, a couple of nutbags could do anything at any time, right? I mean, this is, you know, we can't magnify.
I think more important would be Trump's reaction to or his goading.
Exactly.
That.
And if he loses, my suspicion is that he is, a petulant child, and he will not concede. But he doesn't have to. There's no legal reason for him to do it.
Nothing about his comportment so far suggests that he has a gracious concession speech in him. But, boy, that would be a real patriotic thing to do, to give the kind of speech that McCain gave, that Romney gave, that all these guys, every losing presidential candidate going back, give back, say, for the good of the country, you know, it was a tough race, and I lost, and we're going to move on. I'm going to continue to advocate for my views, but I know I'm channeling.
Who are we talking about?
I'm channeling the wrong person here, but you know, there's a hope.
Did you see him at the Al Smith dinner? I mean,
oh gosh, that was.
I have never been more disgusted by an appearance of a. I mean, I really
say that every week on this podcast.
It just gets worse. The Al Smith dinner, for those who don't know, is usually a couple weeks before the election, and it's a time where they both candidates are seated on either side of a cardinal.
It's the strangest damn thing.
Last time was Ken Reed's, I remember.
and they're supposed to just poke gentle fun at each other, and Trump just does. You know how corrupt Hillary is? I'm just going, oh, my God. He was literally booed.
He was bad. But, you know, I do take John's point that one of the interesting things about this week is that Trump has been relatively quiet, and he's let some of these stories about Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation, WikiLeaks email.
With one exception, and this speaks to, I think, his inability or his failure. He was given on a silver platter the Obamacare numbers. And he goes to his club in Doral and he says, my workers, this is killing my workers. It's crushing them.
And then the general manager of that club
says 95% of the workers are covered by private insurance.
I know. He says, yeah, they're actually pretty good. And that general manager, I believe, is working at a putt golf at Wheeling right now. I believe he's been sort of demoted. But, you know, in another week, this would have been a conversation about Bill Clinton's WikiLeaks and Hillary Clinton's WikiLeaks and the tangled web of making money for his foundation that orbits around Bill. I really think Donald Trump has a chance of beating Bill Clinton in this election, you guys. but no, really, you know, Kristen McQuarrie isn't joining us this week, and it's too bad because she also sent to us this week the video of Bill Clinton at a previous State of the Union address saying many of the things that Donald Trump has been saying about immigration and border security. And it was at least a bad week for Bill Clinton. And for some reason, that does seem to matter in the Hillary versus Donald Trump campaign.
Well, I think the whole narrative of the Clintons generally is, you know, that the greed, the avarice, I mean, it's remarkable. And so this week's WikiLeaks, I mean, the WikiLeaks in general, any one of these stories would sink a campaign in a normal
Which
election
ones
year.
Really? No, I want to disagree with you.
Yeah, I don't think they're as bad as they're advertised.
I think the pay-to-play? Are you serious?
But there hasn't been a pay-to-play. That's the thing. This is
the Moroccan president? Are you kidding me? $12 million for, I'm going to give to the foundation for in exchange for a sit-down with Hillary?
She wasn't Secretary of State at the time. She was a private citizen.
Okay, that's still okay.
But even then, it goes to the foundation.
She's a private citizen raising money for her foundation. What's wrong with her sitting down with someone for a $12 million donation?
But that was clearly the quid pro quo of this thing.
But that's okay for
a private citizen if you give me $12 million.
Politicians do it all the time.
But that's the thing, and that's the Clinton MO, is to kind of skate close to the line, stay on the line, live on the line.
Well, they've been very good at not letting us see what the quo is yet. I mean, and that's the one thing with these things we haven't seen.
Because in power, you sit down. Here's how it works. You give $12 million to the foundation. You get to sit down with Secretary Clinton. Maybe Bill shows up. Hey, how you doing? You put that picture on behind your desk in your government office in Morocco. That shows that you have some serious chops.
How does that differ from what every politician does? Every politician will meet with his donors before he meets with a common person.
Is that okay?
But you can't get selective indignation over this. This is like, I mean, I think I agree with my understanding of what Steve is saying, which is that there's not a lot of like truly outrageous stuff in these WikiLeaks, and you know, a lot of these things that are going back and the back and forth that they've captured with Podesta and
that's
Cheryl
just
Mills
political
and all
that stuff.
It's like it's kind of.
Well, let me give you an example. Comment specifically on this, Eric. So Hillary said in a speech that you need to have a public face and a private face when you're negotiating things. When you're when you're governing. And boy, that sure that resonated for about 2 or 3 days. Is that damning to Hillary Clinton, and how damning is it?
It's damning to her, but it's damning to every politician who does that, which is just about all of
them.
Or
business person isn't that just speaking the truth?
That's I mean, if okay, you're, but that's
if you're
one.
If you're negotiating a contract or whatever, this is my last offer. Right? Isn't that
but
a public
that's one
position?
Of the, and we're going to give money to the foundation. Oh, we're going to kick a little bit, you know, $2 or $3 million towards Bill Way for right. a not, speech here. And that's another thing. Let's also not forget the WikiLeaks about ginning up the process to make sure that Bernie Sanders gets screwed out of the nomination, or the process is obviously rigged.
You're talking about Wasserman Smith
yes.
and all of that?
I mean, it made her
if anybody has a
position.
Claim to the election is rigged, it's Bernie Sanders. It's not Donald Trump.
Oh,
Trump
no,
has
course.
Been the beneficiary
yes.
of the media more than anybody ever.
Now, can
all
I
right,
just
guys.
Say one thing, John, because I
yep.
do want to be clear. I do think that Bill Clinton, Inc., email that stuff is bad and is damaging. So I mean, it's not.
Although he
all
didn't
good.
Coin that phrase.
No,
I mean
it was a very loyal aide of his who was the one apparently arranging these paid speeches at the same time as the donations.
Chelsea
That's
came
not a good
off,
thing. Yeah,
Chelsea came off looking pretty good. She's the one who was saying,
yeah.
"Hey, knock this off. This is not
yeah.
looking
yeah.
good."
And, well, I'll just second Scott's sentiment in that it looks bad. You know, and I don't like it either, Scott. I don't like it either. But I think. There's more smoke than fire. I'm like Steve. I'm really waiting for the quo. I mean, for all of these leaks, where is the thing where it really something specific
happened? $2 million in Bill Clinton's
happened.
Pocket.
I mean, well, in his pocket. I'm looking for the other side of the coin. I want to see that.
The good news, John, is you'll have 8 years of investigations looking for it.
No, I'm going to have four, Steve. There will be four.
Well, okay. Let me make a prediction that we may see some really inflammatory stuff. I mean, WikiLeaks, I have real problems with this entire idea of WikiLeaks because, I mean, this is stolen material that the media is just regurgitating.
Stolen by a nemesis.
We don't know that.
We don't.
People keep saying that. There's no hard
whoever
evidence
it's
yet of
stolen,
that.
If I stole information, if I went to Rahm Emanuel's house and stole information out of his desk, I would be fired, and the Tribune would
really?
Never print. The Tribune would never print what I found.
Well,
whatever it was.
I get your point, so, but WikiLeaks isn't stealing it. They're the repository for people who give it stuff and they disseminate it.
They are trafficking in stolen goods. But let me beyond that, what I'm saying is they have this information. They've been parceling it out little bit by bit in an effort to try to play a role in our election. If they had just gotten a dump of information and put it out whenever they got it, August, whenever it came out, then you'd say, okay, well, they just passed it along. They are parceling it out for maximum political damage, which is why I expect we're going to see something even more inflammatory, even more incendiary in the next week, and it's going to be way too late for the Democrats to try
yeah.
to prove it.
Oh, I think it might be too late for people to process
well,
it,
that's what
Eric.
I was going to say, Eric. I think if they'd been smarter and they have that bombshell, they should
yeah.
have dropped it a couple weeks
Play
ago.
Play it now.
Yeah, I don't know. You're right. I mean, but you know, there is early voting, but most people vote on election day. So, which
okay,
is what,
time for
November
you guys
28th?
To give us your recommendations of something you are watching, reading, listening to, or consuming. I can go first, unless somebody's got their hand up. Steve, Eric, Scott,
go for
nice.
It. Go.
I'll call on you, John.
Here's what you should do. And you'll be glad you did. Read Thomas Jefferson's inaugural address when he said, "We are all Republicans, we are all Federalists," and he talked about how at the end of a hotly contested election, which was his, that it behooves all of us to come together. It sounds Pollyanna-ish the way I just described it, but it's real poetry. It's beautiful prose the way he wrote it, and the sentiment is so true today. And so, in fact, the Financial Times, I think, of London actually reprinted part of it just as a sort of aside to what this election is doing. Read Thomas Jefferson's first inaugural address, you know, when he just comes into office.
Are your shows sold out? Your interviews with Jefferson will sold out?
Yeah, they are.
I was elected class president as a freshman of Manteno High School, and I had a very nice acceptance speech as well. I don't know if it's posted anywhere, but I think
that would be interesting
back.
For somebody to collate.
Sophomores, we are all juniors. We are all jocks. We are all nerds.
We
are all freaks.
Purple.
Thomas Jefferson's inaugural address.
I want to suggest Goliath, which is a new show with Billy Bob Thornton. And I think it's either on Netflix or Amazon. I apologize. But he plays this sort of down and out lawyer. I've only watched one episode. They just dropped the season with a couple of weeks ago. But it looks like it's going to be a very promising another one of those great internet programs, Goliath.
What's it about?
He's a lawyer who is down and out, and he the law firm that he left is run by William Hurt, and he's a nefarious looking guy, and his ex-wife is high up in the law firm as well. So he is getting up in the morning and going to the corner bar in Southern California, and he's presented with this case, and he's suing this, it looks like, a Defense Department contractor who was represented by his ex-law firm. So that's how it's set up in the first episode.
Yeah, it's a great show. It's a terrific show.
I'm going to recommend the Uniball Roller Grip Fine Point Pen.
I really appreciate you thinking about this in advance.
I know, Eric, it is.
He's just finding stuff. It was just a Dixie cup.
He's like reading what's ever in his hand.
Go on my Facebook page. I have a Facebook entry this year. This week I took issue with a man who in New York Magazine did a whole article saying that the Uniball Vision Pen was the finest writing instrument disposable writing instrument you could buy. I took strong exception to this. I think the Uniball Roller Grip Fine Point is. I got like 50 responses, people weighing in with their favorite pens. I would like people email me, ericzorn@gmail.com. I want to hear what your favorite writing instrument is, because I really want to get in a stock of the best writing instruments. I'm tired of writing with these crappy ballpoints.
Let's all sing it together. Zorn.
Yeah, mine is the Dixon Ticonderoga No. 2 Soft Lead Pencil, which I have in my hand right now.
It's
my
all-time
favorite
best
writing instrument. How about you, Scott? What are you up to these days?
I am going to do a plug for my new daughter-in-law, who just landed a radio show in Birmingham, Alabama, but it's an internet show. You can listen to it at from 7 to 11 a.m. on Substrate Radio. That's Substrate Radio, one word, .com, from 7 to 11 a.m. weekdays. And she describes it as wake-up weirdness. I get weird and help you wake up.
Nice.
And it's a combination of really interesting music. You can also find it on TuneIn. The app, and it introduces me, the old guy, to brand new music, and it's really, really good. And she's actually very, very, very good. And you'd be listening to a new talent coming up in radio.
Late breaking news: just a tweet from Mark Kirk. Sincere apologies to an American hero, Tammy Duckworth, and gratitude for her family service.
That's well done.
Well, good for him.
That's the way you should do that. Shouldn't have said it to begin with. That's our podcast for this week. We'll drop another one on you on Friday. Thank you to our producer, Kristen Decker.
Yay.
And to our engineer, Bob Ferguson. Yay. I'm John Williams, and we are the Mincing Rascals.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.
You little rascal, you!